10 until 11 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM. Get ready to press record.
Hey, this is Cleo, and I hope you folks will join me Tuesdays at 5 for my new show, All Tunes. From punk rock to folk, we got it all. Tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM. See you Tuesday.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Decolonizing the Playlist. Today's episode isn't just about music. It's about what our ears have been trained to love. Every beat, every chord, every category carries history. Colonialism didn't just draw borders on maps. It drew borders around sound, deciding which voices mattered, which rhythms were serious, and which ones were just noise. I wanted to talk to Tirchen about how we all navigate that, across genres that call themselves alternative, underground, or experimental, because even rebellion has rules. So this is a conversation about taste, about power, and about what it means to listen differently, to unlearn, to reimagine, to hear the world on new terms. But before we get into these conversations, I want you to sit with this first track. Think of it as a way of clearing the palate, a reminder that sound has always been political, that rhythm has always been a kind of memory. What you're about to hear isn't background music. It's a challenge, a pulse from somewhere outside the Empire's playlist.
My name is Aiden. I am a co-host of Beat Banter Thursdays at 1 p.m.
Nice, nice. Could you give me a little rundown of what your show's about?
We basically just play anything, to be honest. Like, anything that we've been listening to recently. Sometimes we have guests, sometimes we do interviews.
I see.
So just kind of vibes, you
know? Yeah, just kind of vibes. Nice, nice. That's pretty chill. All right, who am I talking to today?
This is Sam, and I have a show called Punk is Dead. It's on Monday nights at 10, and from the name you can probably tell, it's lots of punk and hardcore stuff.
Nice, nice, nice. Hello, who am I speaking to?
My name's Tommy. I'm a second year psychology student, and I'm a volunteer at CFRC, where I run the show Dark Side of the Tune. And its main focus is shedding light on music that isn't necessarily so mainstream, so more alternative, stuff like that.
Okay. And who am I here with today?
My name's Maddie, and I am the host of Revelation Radio.
Nice, nice. And what's your show about?
My show, well, the general idea is kind of broadcasting different sounds. I like to say sound shaping subcultures. Nice. Have I executed on that one 100% every single episode? No. But the general idea is just to uplift different voices, kind of share resources. I also really like doing book segments and highlighting some interesting books that I think people could read, because education is everything, girl. And I think diversifying our playlists, our reading, and all that type of stuff, I think, is kind of my idea, my focus. But I feel like sometimes I just go off the wall and just start playing random songs. So, you know.
All right. Nice, nice. Very good. I got some questions for you here today.
Mm-hmm.
And are you ready to take a stab?
Of course.
All right. first one. Who or what first taught you what good music sounds like? And do you still agree with that definition today?
When I was a kid, I did piano lessons, and so I think my first introduction to music is probably through my parents, which I think is like where everyone first hears music, I guess. And so my dad would listen to a lot of Chinese rock music, and 80s classics, pop hits, and my mom would listen to more R&B stuff, a lot of Lauryn Hill, a lot of Brandy, something like that.
Underrated
for sure. So that was kind of my base, and then I also did some piano lessons as a kid, so I think there was a certain affinity for classical music in my family as well.
Okay.
So that was kind of where the base was laid, I guess, with my music taste.
Okay. I got some questions to ask you. Are you okay if I ask them?
Yeah, all good.
All right, cool. First off, who or what first taught you what good music sounded like? And do you still agree with that definition today?
It probably would have been, really basically being AC/DC when I was, maybe 9 or 10.
Okay,
just because
nice.
I was just tired of pop on the radio. My sister listening to pop growing up with Taylor Swift and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, finally hearing hard rock, that kind of did it for me.
Started playing
guitar because of it.
Oh, nice. Okay. And do you still agree with that kind of definition framework today?
I think I accept more genres than just rock now. Mm-hmm. Before it was just, it had to have a guitar in it pretty much.
I see.
But I don't know. It seems more real. It's less manufactured than a lot of modern pop, which is, I still do agree with that. I don't like the manufactured corporate pop that's put out a lot.
Mm-hmm. Very formulaic,
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, okay. So when did you first realize that your sense of good or important music might have been shaped by Western or mainstream standards?
I feel like it never hit for me as a full realization. It's something that's brewing, because what you hear in mainstream songs and mainstream media, it's obviously through kind of what the general, I don't know how to phrase this properly.
It's very commercialized.
It's very commercialized, and I feel like it's hard for different voices and different sounds to break into the mainstream and to be able to get their music played and get the streams up on things like streaming services.
Mm-hmm,
and it's hard to advertise to the population, because unfortunately, even in music, you've got the interplay of you have to somehow monetize this, you know?
Yeah, because the modern day music industry, especially today, it's very much decided by, one, shareholders of major record labels, and two, algorithms when we take into account streaming services like
Spotify.
Apple Music, even YouTube as well. And it's like they all kind of come together to kind of socialize people into a certain notion of what music ought to be, ought to sound like,
Those are just big, colossal companies, So
yeah, it's
playing into that.
The American music industry, especially, it's just ruled by a handful of record labels. Because especially even when you look at all the smaller ones, they're owned by a bigger one. So at the end of the day, it's pretty much all the same shareholders deciding what gets big, what gets radio play, that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that was very much a recent discovery not really recent, but I guess I think Western standards for music in the Western world are so ingrained into our culture that it's hard to think or apart from that framework.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I'm also, this is my first year also as a music student, where I'm taking music courses, and that's something that we actually talk about. And I don't know when maybe I was first introduced to this idea, but it's something that I've been thinking about a lot recently, not just for music, but art in general. I'm also taking film courses and stuff, and thinking about how like narrative cinema and is like constructed in a similar way to like value not just like in its form but also like to value like Western concepts of beauty, of like the male gaze, stuff like that. It's the same with music, how certain structures like in pop songs are like deemed as more valuable, I guess.
Yes.
And I think that has to do with also being in like under like a capitalist system as well. Yes. Like there's, and especially in the streaming age, there's certain structures of songs and forms that are like meant to do better for the algorithm, to do better and to be more popular, I guess. Yeah, I guess
the algorithms are focused on interaction first and foremost. So
exactly,
songs' main priorities isn't necessarily art these days in the streaming era. Mm-hmm. It's more so grabbing people's attention, mm-hmm. keeping them coming back for more. It makes these songs or just the music industry, it has people treat it less like art and more like fast food.
Exactly, you know? And like also this idea of like music consumption, like mm-hmm. that's what people say a lot. Like, oh, mm-hmm. consuming media, consuming music. Mm-hmm. Like, I think consumption is. Like a very extractive idea, you know what I mean? Like to, I don't know. It's just stuff I was thinking about in like my music courses and stuff like that. So I guess maybe that's where I was like introduced really to pinning down these concepts, but it's things I've been thinking about for a while.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So on that point, how do you think genre labels like quote unquote rap or quote unquote world music or urban shape how we hear or value different artists?
Yeah.
I already have a bone to pick with the term genre. Mm-hmm. I think people, especially nowadays, like in discussions surrounding music, focus so much on genre and these like constraints and like, you know, limiting themselves to either listening to like one genre or another.
Yes.
Or like declaring music as a genre. And I think it's such a arbitrary way of like engaging with the music that you're listening to, especially when it comes to like, you know, stuff that maybe isn't necessarily defined within a genre or it's not necessarily looking to define itself within that. I think a lot of artists like, end up getting pigeonholed into like one box, and I can only imagine that it like, you know, influences, you know, what they want to put out and how they want their audience to react to it if they're being told, like, you are X, Y, Z, and that's your sound and that's your category. So yeah, I hate genres. I hate the term, like, all of those distinctions. As much as I still kind of use genres to describe what I'm playing, it's more so for, like, a general feel of what the music is going to be per episode rather than like we're sticking to just this. And I never stick to one genre. Like, I think it'd be impossible to.
I see. The upbringing, the teaching, the school. Oh, my father was a pastor, you know. A pastor. And everything had to be English. And everything. We were not even allowed to speak our country's language in schools, and they called our own languages vernacular. So English was the real language you had to speak in school, so everything was English. With what we were taught in schools, nobody was thinking of whether to be African or not. We just accepted that we were English, and anybody that went to England for studies was a master, you know. So everybody wants to go to England, come back home to be master, you know. So I never thought about it, being African as such, you know. So it didn't mean anything to me until much later in my life. It was in England I started to feel the awareness of having to be an African, because for the first time I came to England, I started to feel, oh, wow. So these white people don't like us too much. You know, this is my experience from having to rent rooms, you know. I had so much. At that time, you read the newspapers in England. House for rent. No colors, no dogs, and all this. That annoyed me a lot. And I had many students, you know, so at my student days in England, I started to be aware of having to be an African. But we had nothing to offer as Africans because we were all just taught English. Like one of the latest songs I'm singing now, I said, teacher, don't teach me nonsense. Right. Now I was trying to let some of my people see, because in Africa, people respect teachers. You know, the teachers, because they teach English and they teach their pupils, you know. Respect teachers and pastors, you know, in Africa. So, okay, now I saw that I should now use teacher as my focus. So I said, I titled the song, Teacher, Don't Teach Me Nonsense. Now, I wove the song into letting the people see that the white men have taught us everything we know. But I made people see also that one important thing they taught us was politics. Because I wove in the song to the elections in Nigeria, because it was a farce. Now, I mentioned democracy. Now, in English, an Englishman will say democracy. But if the African man wants to say it in broken, he will say democracy. You see now? I never thought of the word. I said democracy. That's, now I saw craziness. I said I could not see let my people see that democracy really is not that word, that is really madness, you know. So I said, now I started to sing. I start to think of this word democracy. Democracy. Crazy demo. Demonstration of grace. Crazy demonstration. Then I went a little bit serious, because I know that people will laugh at that when they hear that. Then I went a little bit serious. I said, if it's not crazy, why that in Africa, as time goes forward, things is getting worse. Poor man, they cry. Rich man, they mess. Democracy. Crazy demo. Demonstration of grace. Then I ended up, you know, to fuck the minds of the colonialists up. I said, if a good teacher teaches something and a student make mistake, teacher must tell him that he's making mistake.
I hate when people say world music or like urban, like especially urban is so cringe. Like
that one is very racialized.
For sure. I mean, there was that whole thing with the Grammys, right?
Because Beyonce.
Yeah, like it's just so, such a strange, like, it's just not really, I don't know. I don't understand this idea of urban music. I think it's literally, they're just like, if you're black, you're just put into this category. And so, I don't know. Like even this idea of world music, like, why is Canadian music not deemed world music? You know what I mean? Like, the world is reserved for everything outside of the West, basically. And there's this strange, like, I guess, binary between, like, what is, like, considered, like, music and world music. You know what I mean? Like,
because it's such a generalization, you know, like lumping in everything outside of the West and world music. Like, if you're trying to tell me that music from China and Brazil,
Are similar. Yeah, that's the thing, is there's no, like, especially with genre labels that are so specific, like when you think of country, you think of a very specific thing. When you think of R&B, well, even R&B is a little more, like, but fluid, but when you think of R&B, you think of a certain sound. When you think of world music, it's like, what are you talking about? Like, are you talking about music from, like, which part of the world? Like, which, and even parts of the world, like, even when we're looking at, like, music in just the U.S., like, it's so diverse and broad, like, the spectrum of, even within a genre, like, if you're listening to hip-hop music from Detroit, or you're listening to hip-hop music from California, or whatever, like, there's a lot of, like, different sounds, you know what I mean? So I think these genre labels they're often too general. They're not specific enough to really capture what a sound means, you know what I mean? If that makes sense.
So are there any specific genres you think are unfair in the box then?
I think hip hop for sure. I mean, hip hop is it's strange because I think it's become like so ubiquitous. Like even in pop music, there's like, I mean, there's country songs that use like trap drums now. You know what I mean? Like it's so, it's kind of like hard to pin down even what, like I don't know. It's just, I think a lot of genres, there's a lot of diverse sounds within the genre. And so that's why we have subgenres of specific, like, especially, like, different locations or whatever. Like, when you listen to a Jersey beat, you know it's a Jersey beat. So I guess, like, I don't know if I can think of specific genres that are boxed in, but I think genres, like, inherently box in music in a way. Yeah.
Yeah, and on your point about hip-hop, the music industry in general, ever since, I would say, late 90s, early 2000s, has had a very extractive relationship with hip-hop
for
music.
Sure.
And it reminds me of pretty recently there was this whole news thing about how there has been no hip-hop songs in the top 40 for the first time in decades.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were taking that to say, you know, hip-hop is dead, you know, like that type of stuff. But in my opinion, that doesn't point to an issue with hip-hop for me. Mm-hmm. That mainly signals to me that the music industry as a whole is kind of starting to be done.
Right.
Hip hop. It's kind of like it's outlived its usefulness. Because mm-hmm. even then, a lot of those songs that aren't the top 40, that aren't hip hop, still have oats.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, I think now, especially because hip hop started, I mean, I guess it's debatable, but hip hop started as like a radical kind of like, there's a radical tradition to hip hop. Mm-hmm. And the moment it became like this cultural cachet where you can, it's profitable and it's radio friendly or whatever, that now you have this, it was like, I don't know how to verbalize this, but like it, they've extracted kind of everything they can from the genre. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, now it's so ubiquitous, like hip hop music is everywhere. Mm-hmm. You're listening to a K-pop song, it sounds like, you know, they're, you know, like they have, like, especially South Korea, like, has such a, like, I don't know where I'm going with that.
And I'll especially say, like, on the nature of hip hop even itself.
Yeah.
It's, I feel that back to like the 90s, early 2000s, I feel like hip hop as inception was very like baked in, of course, not only blackness, but class as well.
Oh, for sure.
Like yeah. It was very much baked in the black struggle and by extension, the struggle of being poor mm-hmm. as well. Like if I listen to a song from like, you know, like whether it be like Mobb Deep mm-hmm. or like, you know, like Eric B, you know, mm-hmm. that type of stuff, Rakim, you know, like mm-hmm. Wu-Tang, of course, like they're all very much grounded, you know, like they are songs of people who are part of like, you know, like the working class and like go through like black working class struggles.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
But I think once the late 90s, 2000s rolled around and big record companies start to capture the industry, started putting these what would have been, you know, more independent artists, like tying them to these record labels, giving them millions of dollars, that type of stuff, like moving them on up in the world, mm-hmm. bringing them from grunt status in like the drug dealing industry to being the people who are more so at like the top mm-hmm. of the bureaucracy in those drug dealing rings, is kind of alienating mm-hmm. hip hop.
Yeah, exactly.
It's working class roots, you know? Because I think of like an artist, say, like honestly, Tupac or Biggie.
Right.
Biggie especially, he wrote a lot about being a grunt in the drug trade, about being in the thick of it, you mm-hmm. know, like the realest part of it. Mm-hmm. You compare that to Rick Ross.
Right.
They both talk about drug dealing, but they're coming at it from very different perspectives.
Exactly.
You know?
There's definitely a class element to mm-hmm. it. And I mean, I always think about like Jay-Z, I think is the perfect, like, I don't know, it's this, I think once you get to a certain class position, it's mm-hmm. hard, you become separate from the genre in mm-hmm. a way, you know what I mean? Like there's all these divisions within the genre mm-hmm. in a sense.
Mm-hmm. And like, to your point about Jay-Z, like you could see like over time, as time has gone on, as he's like moved up and up and up, you can see like how what he talks about changed.
Exactly. You know? Now he's talking like that, what's that song? Like the story of OJ, where yeah. he's like, oh, if I had that apartment in Dumbo, all this stuff, mm-hmm. like, take your money, bring it back to the community, like, all this stuff, it's like, I don't know, it's a very, like, black capitalist, like, mm-hmm. like, way of approaching that, where you know, hip hop especially started as a radical tradition, and now it's kind of been subsumed into, you know, American capitalism, mm-hmm. right?
It's been completely co-opted.
Exactly, exactly.
There weren't too many kids in the hardcore scene that weren't influenced by Rock for Life. You had to have that record. You had to know that record. If you didn't know that record, your other punk rock friends might be a little suspicious, you know, like. I know every drum lick off of that record, and I have since I was 14. I knew every single one of their songs front to back. And from listening to Earl. Flail around like a lot of the spazzy fucking white punk rock drummers like me. Earl was like Bernard Purdy or something, you know? He just had this thing. He just seemed like it was nothing. Like, whatever. I'm just killing it. Who gives a shit? I still use a lot of the tricks that I learned from Earl, still to this day. I listen to Nevermind, and there's little fills here and there that I just took from Earl. Listen to How Low Can a Punk Get from that Rap Music for Rap People compilation. And listen to the intro of Smells Like Teen Spirit. They're not exactly the same, but it's close. And that's where I learned how to do it, so. They were a huge influence on the whole band.
Are there specific genres you think are unfairly boxed in? How do genre labels affect what you choose to play?
I think punk a lot of the time can be unfairly boxed in, but like we just mentioned, urban music.
Yeah.
Like, what does that even mean?
Uh-huh.
So a lot of the big genre labels, but yeah, punk, because there's so many elitists in the punk scene.
Yeah.
That if you stray from that sound that like Minor Threat did 40 years ago, people are like, oh, you're not a punk.
Uh-huh.
You're a baby. Like, no.
Yeah.
Like music can evolve. You mm-hmm. need to just let that happen.
Yeah, with a lot of, not just like punk, but like also with like all those interests.
Yeah.
There's a very like Puritan subculture like focusing, like, you know, if you're like a real punk, real goth, you know, like if you're a poser or not, that type of stuff. And like it just seems a bit hypocritical to me, because
yeah.
of course there are people like who just subscribe to these subcultures for the aesthetic, you know? But like at the same time, putting such a heavy emphasis on it to the point where there's no room for evolution, I feel like kind of goes against the rebellious nature of a lot of these subcultures that think.
Yeah, exactly. That's what the big issue with all those, they're supposed to be like accepting of everyone, but then someone strays from their idea and they just say that they're not part of the scene. Like Johnny Rotten from Sex Pistols, I remember he was talking like in the 70s or 80s about how music has to evolve, and now he's like calling out Green Day and other bands that don't fit the Sex Pistols sound. They're like, mm-hmm. and he's like, oh, you're not real punk.
Mm-hmm.
You just turned into a cranky old man.
Yeah.
Going against what you originally said.
Yeah, no, it's, like I said, it's kind of ironic / hypocritical, and it honestly just kind of like it in a way, like it reflects like the Western need to like overly pathologize things and like box things in, which I think really needs to be reckoned with a lot of these subcultures, you know?
Yeah, like everyone needs to fit into their narrow idea still.
Mm-hmm.
It was originally supposed to be against that.
Mm-hmm.
And especially like now where those labels, which once served a very important purpose, especially for like a lot of people who, you know, were marginalized and still are marginalized, they're being able to commodify to be something completely separate from the mainstream, separate from what originally was created for. And then, yeah, it just feels like, it feels cheap, you know, nowadays.
It's especially permanent with the commodification of, in my opinion, punk and goth music.
Yeah.
For one, it's pretty much lost all of its
political. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Especially in the case of punk, because punk is very much been co-opted by a lot of right-wing fascist people, and the goth scene, like, it's
overwhelmingly white. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous.
And very much, like, heavily invested with, again, fascists.
Yeah.
Like, I remember I grew up in St. Catharines, and pretty much every punk I've met in St. Catharines actually was a Nazi. So, yeah, it's quite unfortunate to see how sanitized and bastardized.
Yeah, and I know, like, just as someone, like, around the subcultures, they punks and goths often use this fascist imagery. Nazi punk was, like, a whole thing, and people say, oh, if they're just wearing, like, just using it for the clothes, but it's, like, I don't know the right word, but it's like you're ruining almost what it originally was, and it, regardless of whether it's for like aesthetics or not, you're taking something that like is directly against what it should be for. And also, like, I hate that thing, like, aesthetic, like, we wear an iron cross for instance, or we you know, culturally appropriate hairstyle, but it's just, you know, as an aesthetic. Like, one thing that I can think of specifically in, like, the subgenre of cybergoths, there was a lot of cybergoths who were putting their hair in locks, and it's like, that's not appropriate, and you don't need to be doing that, and it's, sure, it's for your image or whatnot, but it's so far removed from the core of, or the heart of, you know, this counterculture already.
And I think it's very much a symptom of, even though these subgenres are baked in rebellion, it's a notion of rebellion that very much still centers around those notions of individualism, individual style, as opposed to, say, your selfless resistance. And when you have it be more individualistic, it leaves it more open to get co-opted by bad actors, people who don't want to.
And going off of that, the fact that, like, the community no longer exists because no one is interested in creating community, because they'd rather, like you said, like, be individualistic and be one up over other people and be less closer, as it were. Yeah, it's a sad scene nowadays.
I guess an impromptu follow-up after that. Do you believe alternative subgenres like goth and punk can still exist in the future?
I don't think so. There's definitely individuals out there who are still embodying that original spirit and kind of trying to bring that back, whether it be through, like, you know, basement shows and recording on cassettes and, like, a push for physical media. And I'm like number one fan of physical media. But the way that music is consumed nowadays, it's just not viable to say these are movements or scenes that can still exist being consumed in the way that they are, which is, like, so much just surface level, just consumption of sound, rather than, like, actually engaging with the context and the meaning. And again, I think that's what's led a lot of, you know, a lot of fascists into these movements, because it's so divorced from meaning nowadays that it's, you know, they can consume it and it doesn't beg anything like that.
Especially in the case of punk, which is heavily centered around the whole DIY aspect. Once you have music completely circulating in an age of streaming where everything is somewhat at the whims of the algorithm that centers more so interaction than actual art, that wants to grab the attention of the consumer rather than expose the consumer to the art form.
Yeah.
It's like, it makes it so that, like, the true nature of, like, what these artists want to do is, like, it's compromised.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's almost like I think of, this isn't exactly the same, but you've probably seen those videos where people go to art galleries and they're, like, standing in front of works and it's like things that we could have done. And it's like, you're completely divorcing art from its deeper meaning. Like, I can only think of examples of, like, people also come up by, like, Keith Haring's art. Like, if you've taken it so far from its original power that now it's just, that it doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. I get so frustrated over less, though.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people in alternative subgenres, especially gossip genres, say that, you know, fascism isn't punk, Nazis aren't welcome, you know, that type of stuff. Do you think these subgenres have always been leftist, as I see a lot of people say? Or do you think that's a bit of a misdirection?
It is mostly true, but then there is the, like, I know in the 80s and I think the British and US scenes especially, there was a big issue with Nazi skinheads trying to infiltrate shows. Mm-hmm. But it was still the majority of the punks were left-leaning, mm-hmm. so usually when that happened, like, when they would show up to the show, they'd start just... like they'd try and start fights with mm-hmm. the left-leaning punks, mm-hmm. but then they would usually get driven out by uh-huh. all the leftists,
yeah.
just beating them up because uh-huh. they don't really like Nazis showing up to their shows at all.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is true that there is an issue with, I don't know how it sprang from punk, but there was an issue with Nazi skinheads, mm-hmm. and there still is. Mm-hmm. I just think lesser now, luckily.
I think it's somewhat of a misdirection. That's not to say that people who, you know, began the genres were definitely, you know, obviously anti-fascist, anti-Nazi, but looking back even to, you know, in the 70s and the 80s, there were Nazi punks and there was Nazi imagery and skinheads in those, you know, subcultures. And to sit here and say, oh, well, back in the day, like, you know, it was all leftist, it was all, you know, no one let that stuff in. There's evidence that, you know, these individuals, these fascists were somewhat tolerated in some communities dedicated to this music. So I think to say, like, you know, it's always been, at least for punk, for goth, I don't think it has ever been truly anti-fascist. The goth scene is just so overwhelmingly white and so overwhelmingly ignorant. Like, I think of, like, you know, the trad goth scene in the 80s. I listened to a lot of that music, but then you look back and there's bands who were just actively using Nazi imagery. Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah, when she had the arm patch, and it's like, you know, that was only, like, 40, 50 years ago. It's not... You can't say, like, oh, they didn't know any better. They knew better, and people still accepted this and allowed this and allowed it to propagate. And so, yeah, I think for goth, I don't think it has ever truly been leftist. And I don't think it ever will be, because people just allow, you know, what is that called?
Because I think especially with punk's notions of rebellion, at least... punk is very much a product of, like, the 70s, mm-hmm. like, even the 60s.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was very much baked in the youth at the time feeling that they had in the future. Very working class, of course. But the thing is, if we really look at it, where did that economic disenfranchisement come from that incited that type of rebellion in the first place? Because the 60s and 70s, that was in the wake of the collapse of the colonial order, the collapse of European domination over the rest of the world to an extent.
Yeah.
But still, it's the same thing. And it's just like, if you are rebelling against a lost future in economic disenfranchisement, that comes from you and your society no longer having your boots on the backs of people who are different from you, then, well, maybe you should reckon with that before you reckon with, you know, your own kind of lost future.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, obviously, like, I can't say anything for, like, you know, back in the beginning of the scene, but at the punks that I see today, it's so overwhelmingly steeped in individualism and in making yourself who often would. I mean, from most of the punks that I know are white, and therefore they fit in. And it's so steeped in of wanting to be different and wanting to separate themselves from that. But it's taking these notions and, like, this, you know, something in, like, this subculture and just completely ignoring where it came from and ignoring the work that still needs to be done. And I will say, like, in this case, I will use the word poser. Because if you're not, you know, if you're a punk and you're not dismantling that or unpacking that, you are a poser. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that.
Yeah, like...
I hate saying the word poser, but yeah.
But it's warranted.
Yeah,
it's
okay,
warranted,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, there, like, are some people out there, like, who really only partake in punk subculture without any alternative, but yeah, purely for the stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
And aren't willing to really reckon with anything.
No.
Subculture.
No.
You know, like I said, every punk.
Against the system, mm-hmm, just like validly, but then there's also the ones that are against the system and angry, mm-hmm, but they have more comprehension, mm-hmm, of what's going on in the world. Mm-hmm. Like, they're more well-read, mm-hmm, and they know why they're angry, and mm-hmm, they're typically more uplifting of, mm-hmm, of other, like, minority groups that are more disenfranchised than them, even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like they're actually like political myself.
Yeah, like Propagandhi, they're a band from Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. They're great. They're like very well read, mm-hmm, punks. Nice. And yeah, they have great lyrics. And there's them versus like the Sex Pistols, who are just, mm-hmm, very angry, uh-huh, but they don't really dive deeper than I'm angry.
Yeah. Just kind of venting their anger a bit aimlessly.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. Like, it's a problem a lot of alternative subcultures have, where a lot of people co-opt the aesthetics, but none of the politics, you know, or don't do really any deeper self-reflection than just adopting the cool aesthetics.
Yeah.
On CFRC 101.9 FM, every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 p.m., you'll hear Finding a Voice. My name is Bruce, host of that poetry-focused spoken word program. On it, you'll hear local readings and events, occasionally telephoned interviews across Canada, and always a touch of music. Again, Finding a Voice, here every Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Check it out. Hope to catch you there.
Yo, Ellie.
Hey, Nate, what's up?
We're on the radio.
What? Like right now?
Yeah, it's a promo from Live Sessions.
Oh, yeah, CFRC Live Sessions, Thursdays at 11 a.m.
Listen to sexy bands play live on air and hear exclusive interview highlights.
Sounds awesome. Tune in on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Lit. Okay, peace out, dude.
See you Thursday.
Hey, do you want to make a real impact in the Black community? Join us where we connect you with Black-led organizations from all around the world. Get ready to get involved. Find the organization based on the location of interest. Follow us at supportblackcharities.org.
Damn, 3 a.m, still going down. What's up, H-Town, Southside, you know what I'm saying? Just screwing here, hollering at my G's and players. You know what I'm saying? While laying black and serve, what's up?
What kind of sonic world do you hope your show contributes to? What do you want listeners to feel or unlearn after tuning in?
Okay, the sonic world. I just want it to reflect every aspect of the world. Mm. I feel like at least the idea of my show, I don't know how well I'm executing it, is just highlighting sounds from around the world, mm, from so many different people, mm, and exposing people to something that they may not have been exposed, mm-hmm, to, especially around like the Queens and Kingston area. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's very... I mean, I had a really good conversation about this the other day with some very cool people from the Lavana, mm-hmm, Gender Advocacy group, which is a really cool group if you guys want to look into them. They're super cool. But just talking about how, not one-dimensional, but there is a strong majority of people in the area that may not have been exposed to that much. They come from a very much similar, like, say, economic background, or it's like a lot of white people around here. So it's kind of being that, I would like to act as that person that invites people to appreciate. Just different sounds and how that can connect to some sort of social context or history, and giving resources so people can look more into that. Because obviously I can't speak on so many issues because I don't really know. I mean, I look at everything through an academic lens or cool conversations that I've had. But kind of acting as like, hey guys, let's learn a little bit more and see what we can do.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, nice.
Yeah. What about you?
Mainly a world that's, you know, more not so antagonistic towards black art, you know, and not so unfair to black art, because even though, like, I would say the music industry very much relies on black art to stay afloat, it definitely doesn't appreciate it. It just looks at it as like something to just suck from, you know, not necessarily something to respect, you know. And I was talking with someone else I was interviewing about this, and it's been I guess I don't even see any news recently, but it's been a thing where it's like it's been pointed out that for the first time in like decades, no rap song has been in the top, you know, and people are saying like, you know, hip hop is dead, that type of stuff. And it's just like, I wouldn't necessarily say there's, I wouldn't say it indicates anything wrong with hip hop, but I think it more so indicates that it's the music industry is starting to suck hip hop really dry, you know. Like its course is starting to dry out, you know, because mind you, like every other big genre kind of takes elements from hip hop these days, especially pop, you know, and a lot of those pop songs that are in the top 40, they're taking a lot from hip hop, you know.
Yeah, no, I feel like historically speaking, and even in like our everyday society, like the West does kind of suck and repackage things that are like culturally significant to a group of people, and they repackage it for whatever they want to do with it so they can profit off of it.
Because pop, country, hell, even if you even look at K-pop, like it even that like takes a lot from hip hop for some songs, and it's just like all those songs are in the top 40, but no song categorized as hip hop is in it, even though every other major song is taking some type of element from it. And it just indicates to me that hip hop's time may be coming in terms of capitalism, the music industry really just sucking its body dry and like taking everything from it and just using it for its own ends, you know. I want my show to kind of create a sonic world where black art doesn't exist below the wider music industry, but can exist on an equal playing field.
Who taught you to hate the texture of your hair? Who taught you to hate the color of your skin to such extent that you bleach to get like the white man? Who taught you to hate the shape of your nose and the shape of your lips? Who taught you to hate yourself from the top of your head to the soles of your feet? Who taught you to hate your own kind? Who taught you to hate the race that you belong to? So much so that you don't want to be around each other. No, before you come asking Mr. Muhammad, does he teach hate? You should ask who yourself, who taught you to hate being what God gave you. We teach you to love the hair that God gave you. Here you are way out in the middle of the ocean, can't swim, and you worried about someone that's in the bathtub and can't swim. We don't steal, we don't gamble, we don't lie, and we don't cheat. And that also deprives the government of revenue. Because you can't get into a whiskey bottle without getting past the government seal. You can't open a deck of cards without getting past the government seal. Here, the white man makes the whiskey and then puts you in jail for getting drunk. He sells you the cards and the dice and puts you in jail when he catches you using them. So he's against us because we fix it where he can't catch me anymore. We take the dice out of your hand and the cards out of your hand and the whiskey out of your hand.
We like to think we're free because we can choose what we listen to. But freedom isn't in the shuffle button. It's in the act of hearing differently. Colonialism taught us harmony as hierarchy, rebellion as branding, noise as crime. Maybe decolonizing the playlist isn't about finding new genres, but about breaking the habits that keep us deaf to the world. Every song is a question of power. Who gets to be heard? Who gets archived? Who gets erased? So before the next beat drops, ask yourself, whose rhythm is this? And what world does it want you to move in? This has been Sounds of Diaspora, celebrating Black music across all eras, genres, and borders. And I'd like to give my greatest and most special thanks to all the hosts who so generously contributed to this episode. I've been your host, Jaden, signing off.
Are you looking for a summer job? What about a career in engineering, computing, or technology fields? Queen's Career Service is excited to host in-person career fairs in Barlett Gym, Mitchell Hall, on Tuesday, January 20th for the Summer and Part-Time Opportunities Fair, and Wednesday, January 21st for the Engineering and Technology Fair. Drop in anytime between 10:30 a.m. and 3:30 p.m. at Barlett Gym. These events are open to all Queen's students of all years. Students are encouraged to sign up in My Career to receive event reminders.
KPP Concerts and CFRC 101.9 FM continue to bring the heat this fall with a stacked lineup of local concerts. At the Broom Factory, you can catch country star Robin Ottolini on November 20th, Virginia DeVegas on November 21st, Queens grad Charlie Houston on November 28th, Stephen Stanley with No Electric on November 29th, Bat Sabbath on December 13th, folk icon Garnet Rogers on December 14th, and local rap hero Slaves of Spanky on December 19th. And don't forget to get your tickets now for the big show by Canadian alt faves, the Strombellas, playing Kingston Grand Theatre on November 23rd. For a complete list of shows and ticket information, visit kppconcerts.com. And don't forget to donate to CFRC's funding drive via cfrc.ca, where you may win $50 vouchers redeemable for KPP Concerts.
Are you listening from inside a local prison, or do you have a friend or loved one in a local prison or youth detention center? Calls from Home is a monthly radio program for you. On Calls from Home, we share voicemails, messages, song requests, and dedications. Anyone can contact us with a message or song request for a friend or loved one on the inside. To get in touch, call or text 613-917-1390. Email cfrcprisonradio@riseup.net or send us a message on Instagram at cfrcprisonradio. The CFRC radio signal reaches the following local and regional prisons: Millhaven, Bath, Collins Bay and Frontenac, Joyceville and Pittsburgh, the Sundance Youth Detention Center here in Kingston, Quinte in Napanee, and the Cape Vincent Correctional Facility in upstate New York. Messages and song requests will be broadcast once per month on Wednesday between 7 and 8 p.m. here on CFRC 101.9 FM or on the web at cfrc.ca. For 2025, Calls from Home will air on the following dates: April 16th, May 14th, June 11th, July 9th, August 6th, September 3rd, October 1st, October 29th, November 26th, and December 24th. Please send in your message at least one day before the broadcast date. These upcoming show dates, contact info, and additional information is available online at cfrc.ca or on Instagram at CFRC Prison Radio. We look forward to receiving your messages and sharing them over the airwaves.
Yo, Ellie.
Hey, Nate, what's up?
We're on the radio.
What? Like right now?